This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golfing experience for both members and non-members alike. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. The semi-private golf club's grand opening will be on June 20th. You can find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. And with that, we welcome you to Talking.Golf here on a Tuesday as we take the Memorial Day Monday off. And Gary D'Amato not taking much time off because you will be at the club at Lac La Belle this week to play the course. And then next Monday, kick off your course reviews series for the year. I can't think of a better place, Gary, than to kick it off with our podcast sponsor, the Club at Lac La Belle.
I'm looking forward to it, Rob. I'm playing there tomorrow. Hopefully we'll dodge some thunderstorms that are scheduled to hit in the afternoon, but hopefully I can get the whole round in. I'm not sure if I'm going to play all 18 holes at this point or just get a tour of some of the holes with Tyler Morse, whose family owns the course, but really looking forward to it. Looking forward to starting our course reviews. And we're also launching on Wisconsin.Golf, our golf course directory, in conjunction with our first review on this coming Monday. So a lot of stuff coming up, and I'm looking forward to it, Rob.
Yeah, the course directory is a project of our Mike Davis, who's been converting our current database of courses into that directory. It'll be easily searchable, and there'll be a lot of opportunities for courses around the state to partner up with that feature and be able to promote things going on at their courses as well. So we'll make sure and talk more about that next week when we have a chance to kind of give readers the opportunity to see what it looks like and see how it works. But Gary, you're around at the club at Lac La Belle. You wrote a column today. You've got two spiral-bound notebooks that detail every single round of golf that you have played since you were a very young person. I mean, the early 70s. Let's start first with when did this project start, and what prompted you to start recording a lot of the details of the rounds that you played?
You know, it's really weird. We posted the column this morning. It's got a pretty strong reaction on social media. I think, Rob, a lot of people think I'm crazy. Some people have identified with it and said, you know, I've done a similar thing, or I've kept track of every course I've ever played, but not the details every round that I've ever played. You know, it started in 1971 when I took up the game. I don't know what made me enter stats. I've always been statistically oriented, I guess, and so I started entering statistics for the rounds I played, you know, as a 15-year-old kid. Just started out on a par three course, basically, and I just kept going. I mean, that's the only way I can explain it, is I kept going for 49 years, and here we are today, and I've kept the stats for some 2,200 rounds of golf that I've played in my life. So, yeah, call me crazy, I guess, Rob.
So the stats include, I'm looking here at the picture we have, 2011. Birdies, pars, bogeys, one putts, two putts, three putts, greens in regulation, and score. What are the highlights of why those categories? What are you looking for as you look back on those? And is there anything that when you look at a round of golf with those numbers in particular that tell you whether it was a good day, bad day, or anything other than, you know, what can you get out of the numbers that you're recording?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the things that I originally thought I could get out of the numbers was where I could see, you know, I could see where I needed room for improvement. If I was three putting a lot, or if I was missing a lot of greens, whatever, I would think, you know, maybe I can concentrate on putting and improve those numbers. But as it turns out, Rob, I need help in every area. So maybe it's bad to keep the stats because you look at how bad you are in a lot of areas. But the impetus originally, I think, because if I remember right, this was half a century ago, was to see where I could improve. And sadly, I need to improve everywhere, Rob.
Well, and that's something I know, you know, from when my daughter played college golf, her coach would have her keep, you know, detailed stats on every rounds, especially with greens and regulation fairways hit, because you can really, I think that's where it all starts. And, you know, I think the more fairways you hit, the more opportunities you have to hit greens and regulation. However, you and I have both covered a lot of golfers who don't hit a lot of fairways, Gary. And in that green and regulation stats, stat is the one that really dictates, you know, whether they're still on top of their game and you have that scrambling ability. Numbers are great in the game of golf. I guess that's what, you know, beyond just, you know, birdies, pars and bogeys and others, I think that's what makes it so much fun, is you've got different areas that you can analyze to this level.
Yeah, and I think intuitively I knew even at age 15 that keeping track of greens and regulation was somehow going to be important, and that's why I did it. But sadly and regrettably, I never kept fairways hit, which is an important stat. You're right. And, you know, I could start now, I guess, but I would be missing fairways hit for the majority of my golfing life, so I probably won't do that. But I'm kind of I really regret that I did not keep fairways hit all this time.
Although, Gary, let's face it, you and I have both played a lot of courses where we can't tell the fairways from the rough, right?
That's very true. Just aim for the center stripe.
That's right. That's right. Now, you've played 442 different courses, 26 states, 8 countries. We could spend hours talking about your favorite course, your favorite state to play in, your favorite country to play in. But let's start with just a couple of memorable moments out of this. Is there one course that you keep going back to because you like it so much?
Yeah, you know, I grew up playing Grand Park in South Milwaukee, one of the Milwaukee County courses. And I just have a ton of nostalgia when I think about that golf course and all the rounds I played there with my buddies, you know, high school buddies growing up. And that was our home course for our high school golf team when I went to St. Francis High School. So I always try to go back to Grand Park a couple times every year just for nostalgia's sake. And sometimes I'm joined by, you know, a friend, an old friend, or a guy I played on the golf team with. So that course is going to always be near and dear to my heart. But, you know, Rob, people say, I didn't like this course, I didn't like that course. For some reason, I like almost every golf course I've ever played. I just think you're out playing golf. What better thing is there to do? You know, so I've never been picky about golf courses, really. I like them all. And maybe that's my downfall. But I honestly like playing almost every course I've ever played. I can't think of a rotten one, put it that way.
Well, and I think if we've learned anything during the COVID-19 era here, Gary, it's the fact that, you know, there's something to be said for the ability to be out playing golf. I mean, when we didn't have it for that month, I think a lot of us missed it. And I think the appreciation there is, you know, kind of takes on a different perspective, given that, you know, golf isn't a right. It's a privilege, and it's an opportunity, and it's a great way to spend time outdoors. And you and I have both been doing it for a long, long time, and I think we share that that opinion. As you look at you know, the most memorable round that you've played out of, you know, in terms of when you look at numbers and you say, wow, you know, I can't believe that I shot this score on this course, at, you know, with that you know, with the way I was hitting the ball that day, or, you know, I was hitting the ball so well that you know, I'll always highlight. I see here the TPC at Deer Run in 2012 was probably the one that you'd like to replicate every time you go out, right?
Yeah, that was one of those days where everything I looked at just went in a hole. One of those rare days, I should say. But I have to say, Rob, my most memorable round was I played the old course in St. Andrews, and I played it in an international golf writers competition. I was one of, it was just like a Ryder Cup format, 12 U.S. writers against 12 European writers. And it was a pouring rain, 48 degrees, raining horizontally, miserable conditions. And I won my match. I closed out my opponent 3-1. I closed out the match on the road hole. I don't think, no matter what I do, no matter which course I play in the rest of my life, I don't think anything will compare to that round of golf.
Wow. Yeah. And I think, you know, whenever I look at people's pictures of golf that they're playing around the country, around the world, the ability to stand on the bridge at St. Andrews and with the hotel in the background and history everywhere, I would agree that would be and I've never been overseas, and don't have a real burning desire to, other than maybe to play St. Andrews.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was fortunate to cover the 2005 British Open at St. Andrews. Jack Nicklaus's last major, or last British Open. I think it was his last major, period. And the one Tiger Woods won. So, it was pretty special being walking across back to my dorm at night after covering the tournament. You could walk right across the golf course and walk right over the Swilkin Bridge. A lot of great memories from St. Andrews for sure.
We're talking to the Mighty Mariner from St. Francis High School, Gary D'Amato, here about his life in golf. And Gary, the one other thing that's a couple things that struck my attention here in reading this is you've been fairly consistent too. I mean, your scoring average last year, not much different than your career low, a couple shots here and there. Do you feel you've been fairly consistent from basically start to finish, or did you see? We're at the age, we hate to admit it, where we sometimes see a deterioration in parts of our game that lead to a deterioration in the final score. How about you? What is your analysis of your consistency?
Yeah, I've been really consistent. And unfortunately, Rob, I'd like to have been about 10 strokes better consistent, which would put me in the mid-70s instead of the mid-80s throughout my life. For some reason, I guess I've learned to minimize my mistakes or whatever, but I can usually keep it in the ballpark and usually keep my score in the 80s. But like everyone else, Rob, I'm 64 years old, but I honestly believe I can still get better. I'm still trying to improve, and I'll try anything to get better. And so I think that makes me like millions of other golfers who play this game. We always think the next time we go out, we're going to shoot a better score than the last time we played.
Yeah, we sure do. We sure do. And the one thing too that both you and I have grown up through is this amazing era in the development of technology with golf clubs. What's your opinion, Gary, on how equipment has impacted your numbers that you've kept over the years?
There's no question it's helped. Obviously it's helped the guys on the pro tour to proportionate degree more because of their swing speed, the way they compress the golf ball, but it's helped golfers like me and golfers in the 8 to 15 handicap range. I think you can say that it's honestly helped us get better over the years. I don't know if I'm longer than I was when I was 25 years old, but I don't think I'm much shorter. And to a large degree, that's because of the driver, the shaft and head technology and the golf ball. I'm sure, Rob, you're probably longer than you were when you were 25 too, right?
Much. And I, couple things. One is the equipment. There's no doubt about it. I look back, and a buddy of mine from Wisconsin Rapids was out playing last week with an old Wilson, 525 set of equipment from some, that he probably bought off the shelf at Shopko. And in Wisconsin Rapids back in the day. And I think of all the weird equipment I've had in my bag, I bought your Big Bertha 3 wood.
Yeah.
That's actually still in my bag.
That's crazy.
But the one that I got heckled for the most was my dad would always buy golf equipment from the old Austed catalog. Remember Austed?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a zinc putter in there. And I thought at the time the zinc putter was going to be the precursor to the three ball putter or the, or all the different plates that they put in, these putters back in the day. And so I was carrying that around, and the guys that I'll never forget, the kids that I golf with at Bullseye Country Club, they go, "You still using the zinc there, Hernandez?" And so, yeah, I mean, but now, I mean, I've got, a Ping Derby putter with, one of these enlarged grips. And I think the enlarged grip on the putter is a subtle piece of technology that's really helped me, be able to steady myself as I'm going through the golf ball. We talk about the long putter for, older golfers that help, allow that to happen. As long as you don't anchor, I'm not in favor of anchoring at all, but it is nice to have a little bit fatter grip in my hand when I'm putting, just to kind of help control the tempo. That's a subtle thing, but you know, drivers, you know, wedges. I finally broke down and got a couple of Volke wedges a couple years ago. You know, those have been, I mean, you know, I always doubted the fact that equipment can dictate, you know, what that final number is that you're recording. And there's no doubt it helps tremendously. And I know, I remember a guy that I worked with at the State Journal, Kent Youngblood, was the first guy to have a Big Bertha in his hand. And I tried that one time at Door Creek Golf Course. I'll never forget that. And I go, holy cow, this is just going to revolutionize everything. Because at the time, I had, a little, small-headed, whatever it could have been, it could have been a Mizuno driver, or something, very, low grade. And I think some of the advent of the big driver, I think, has really helped add yards and consistency off the tee. And let's face it, Gary, that's where it all starts.
If people don't think equipment has helped their games, they should go back to using 1970s, heavy steel shafted irons and a persimmon driver in fairway woods, and they'll be quick to admit that equipment has made a huge difference.
No doubt. And then lastly, the ball. I'll never forget when I first started in the game, I thought, this is silly. Every time I hit the golf ball, I leave a smile in it. And this is going to cost me millions. And when they, when they went, what was it, to the two-piece ball or the different, the different covering of the golf ball, it finally, gave us the opportunity to not have to rifle through them. Now I've literally got a cabinet full of golf balls. And because I find so many in the golf course, Gary, and a found golf ball for me is as good as a new one. And, and the technology in the golf ball is so good. So the whole package has really helped you and me, prolong the inevitable. And that would be going from 40 to 45 to backwards 45 to 50, maybe in a 9-hole average.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Rob. Equipment has made a big difference. I don't think I don't think anyone can refute that. I hope they keep coming up with better stuff, Rob. I'm in for the next super driver or putter or anything that's going to help me. I'm all in. That's one of my weaknesses is equipment. I've probably bought 20 sets of clubs over the years, some used, some new, and I've got 40 putters in my putter bag downstairs. So I'm a little bit geeky.
Well, and I think, and I don't know how you store yours, but I'm envious. I saw Tiger Woods' storage area in one of these videos before the match last weekend, and it looks like the club area at PGA Superstore. I mean, slid into the wall, and I got to find myself one of those because I'm running out of golf bags to store my old clubs. Well, Gary, Talking.Golf, sponsored by the club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful golf courses in Wisconsin. And, folks, Gary D'Amato will be there tomorrow, weather permitting, and he will write about his experience and what he's seen at the brand-new restored and recreated golf experience at the club at Lac La Belle. Remember, their grand opening June 20th, a 9-hole loop currently available. The club at Lac La Belle, located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. Find out more at its website, club@laclabelle.com. Gary, you wrote something else in the last week that got a lot of attention, and it was the story about Manuel De La Torre, the longtime head professional at Milwaukee Country Club and one of the great teachers of the game that Wisconsin has produced. And he impacted so many golfers. Both of us have written about his relationship with Martha Nauzi and Sherry Steinhauer during the heyday of their careers on the LPGA Tour. Seemed like whenever Lauren Roberts was coming through Milwaukee for the GMO, he would pay a visit to Manuel De La Torre. And now a lot of the people that have learned from Manuel are now basically preserving his teaching legacy with a website, ManuelDeLaTorreGolfTeaching.com. And I've got, in fact, inches away from me here, Gary, in an old DVD player. I started watching it about a year ago and haven't finished it, but he's got a DVD that they sent us back in the day, and it's not complicated, but that's Manuel. It is getting from point A on the takeaway to point B on the follow through, and making sure that you don't deviate from that, and you gain a simple consistency. And you wrote about how there's a lot of people that are trying to preserve that teaching legacy. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think Manuel de la Torre's system or philosophy, as you said, Rob, is fairly simple. He could certainly talk geometry and physics with any teacher he'd put in front of him, or any student for that matter. He knew the mechanics of the swing like probably few or no, maybe nobody other, very few teachers have, you know, were as versed in the mechanics of the golf swing as he was. But he presented that information in a way that was very easy to understand for golfers of all levels. And he was very good with beginners, very patient. And there's a group of teachers he impacted as either teachers or former students who are trying to keep his legacy alive. And I hope they can succeed for many, many years, but it's going to be a matter of getting younger people involved and learning how he taught and what he taught. And that's going to be the challenge to this group going forward. But, the group, if you look at the website, which you mentioned, ManuelDeLaTorreGolfTeaching.com, there's a list of teachers and students who are, you know, who are part of this group. And they include Martha Nauzi. They include Lauren Roberts, Ted Purdy. Some of the golfers he came across and helped. Tommy Aaron is on that list, of course, the 1971 Masters champion. But there's these teachers who are, who were very impacted by the way he taught and are passing that on to their students. And hopefully they're going to be able to keep Manuel's legacy going for many years to come, Rob.
Yeah, and I tell you, it's weird because, of course, Manuel, was at the height of his game and his profession in terms of teaching before the current era of, launch monitors and technology that way. So a lot of these videos that are contained on there, and some of them include clips from the DVD that I have, and you have to listen, Gary. And I think that's the lost art of listening to your instructor. I wish I would have listened to my instructor back in my junior golf days, Dave Andrews, back at Bullseye Rapids. I just thought I knew it all. I figured all you got to do is get it back here and follow through. But, and essentially that's what Manuel is saying. But there's certain things in what he's saying repetitively in terms of, the takeaway, getting it up to the top of your swing, and then, finding that target line and just in getting to that target line. It really is, despite what you may see from people who are, maybe, ad nauseum looking at how to, tweak that little takeaway path, it's pretty simple. And I love the way he keeps it simple, but, you do have to listen to what he says on the videos that are stored on that site.
Yeah, he was very precise with his language, a very good communicator. He had, very good skills in passing his knowledge and his ideas on to people in a way that they could understand. And he used analogies from other sports a lot, tossing a softball, throwing something underhanded. He told me, I interviewed him quite a few times over the years, and I remember once he said, people are so worried about body positions and where their right elbow is on their takeaway and if their shoulders are turning properly. And he said, you brush your teeth every day, but you never think of your elbow position or how you're holding the toothbrush. You just brush your teeth. And he said, golf is really no different. There's a tool that you use. There's an implement, the golf club. And my whole idea is just getting you to use that tool the best way to propel a golf ball forward. So it was simple, but it wasn't really.
Right. And Gary, tell everybody, I think it was your story that I saw you recount on social media in response to the great reaction we got to the story about the time you were sitting in his office at Milwaukee Country Club and he asked you to look out at the fairway, right?
Yeah, look out at the first hole. His office overlooked the first hole at Milwaukee Country Club, and it was the first time I met him. I had heard so much about him. I was doing a feature story on him, and he said, "Gary, look out there at the first hole and tell me what you see." And I knew it was some kind of test, so I was very observant. I talked about the pine trees on the left and the gentle curve to the right of the fairway and the bunkers down there and the bunkers around the green. And I went on and on. And, I finally stopped and he said, "Are you finished?" And I said, "Yes, I think I am. I'm pretty proud of myself." And he said, "Gary, you never told me you saw the fairway. That's what you're supposed to see." And it was, like getting slapped in the forehead with a hand, Robbie. It was just like, well, of course, that's what you're supposed to see. Why didn't I see it? And that was the way he taught. He would ask these probing questions. And then, you know, if you could answer them satisfactorily, all the more credit to you. But more often than not, you were stumped and he would provide the answer. And it was very plain and simple and right in front of you. But he made you see things in a different way for sure.
Well, that's fun. So a couple of great things to read here on Wisconsin.golf from Gary D'Amato. And so please do that. We've got a lot of other things coming. You're heading out today to cover a tournament. And between watching the match on Sunday, and then now, you know, tournament golf starting to kind of come out of hibernation as we slowly emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic. What are you most looking forward to, Gary? Where are you headed today?
I'm headed to Meadowbrook Country Club near my house in Racine Rock to cover the Wisconsin PGA Section Spring Pro Better Ball. And I think it's their four-ball match play qualifier too. But the main reason we're covering this, Rob, is because outside of, I think there was one maybe Chippewa Valley Golf Association event a few weeks ago. This is the first, as far as I know, the first sort of statewide golf tournament in Wisconsin in the coronavirus age, so to speak. So I'm interested in how the tournament's going to be conducted. Obviously, we'll see social distancing in full force, I would think. And are guys going to be wearing masks? Are they going to be touching the flagstick? I think it's going to be interesting to see how the best, some of the best club professionals and PGA professionals in the state go about their business today in a tournament for the first time this year.
Well, I was just looking at some of the entries here, and great, you know, legends of the game. And this is a team thing, right? So these guys are paired up. If I'm reading this correctly on the tee time, so you're looking at guys like Eddie Teresa, Larry Tisciani.
Yeah. Ryan Helminen, Eddie Teresa is in the field. Yeah, some very good players in this field. So I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys do today.
Wow, this is good. And then, I'm envious. I kind of got the bug watching the match on over the weekend. I thought that was probably as great a golf production as I've ever seen, Gary. I don't know, what did you think of Tiger and Phil with the two quarterbacks?
It surprised me. It actually did, Rob. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was. I think we talked about before the podcast how the rain actually, I think, made the telecast better to see how those guys dealt with those conditions. I thought miking the carts was brilliant. And as you mentioned, Rob, before we got on this podcast, that's something that the Champions Tour should seriously consider, is miking golf carts and having interaction between studio hosts and analysts and the guys as they drive, you know, between shots. I think it added so much to the telecast. You know, Tom Brady was a little bit wooden, I think, which we expected. But he came up with a couple zingers and a couple great shots, too, after some early struggles. Peyton Manning was funny. And, I just thought the telecast and the way they went about it and the way they pulled it off was really good.
Well, I'm excited that golf is starting to come back a little bit. I know we've got the Tournament of Champions over at in Sheboygan coming up here in about a week, and next Monday. And then I was doing some planning for my trip back here in the middle part of June. And trying to figure out, you know, what do we cover? It's weird because we can cover tournaments this year, Gary, differently than we've covered them before, because there's some tournaments, like there's a junior tournament at Lake Ripley Country Club on Monday, the 15th of June. And I talked to Andy Landenberger when he scheduled it. I said, Andy, you've got a junior tournament scheduled opposite the state high school championships. And he goes, yeah, I know, but you know, not everybody gets to play in the state high school tournament. We got a lot of kids that still want to play in events, and especially, you know, they'll be out of school starting that Monday with the WI tournament being, and now with no WI tournament, that's the only show in town. And in fact, the Janesville Riverside event the previous Friday sold out. You know, again, people want to get back, and we're going to be looking at tournament golf a little bit differently. Sure, there's still the final score part of it, but there's also the part of how we're going to do this. And in fact, Neil Johnson from River Falls was on a stream last week from an Outlaw Tour event, and I looked closely, Gary. I'm sure you will today. You know, pin in, pin out, and noodle in the bottom of the cup, no noodle, rakes in the bunkers. How is that handled? There's a lot of those answers that right now don't seem so big because we all want to get back and playing. But if you find yourself in a position where you're, you know, up a shot in a tournament and you're in the footprint of a in a bunker, you know, how do you handle that? And I think that'll be something that we're checking off our list of how is this tournament being run this year, that kind of thing.
You know, Rob, that brings up a funny point. I played Listonia, the links course, last Friday with a bunch of guys, and something happened to me as a direct result of what's going on with the coronavirus pandemic and how golf courses are handling things. Something happened to me that never happened to me before, Rob. I got foamed on the second hole. I got foamed. You know, the little foam collar and the little ring in the bottom of the cup? Well, I hit a putt that went dead in the middle. The flagstick was in, so I guess it would have grazed the right side of the flagstick. But, I mean, that putt was in. It was in the hole. And it bounced out of the cup. It hit that foam collar and bounced out and kind of did a half flip out. And I've got to believe that without that foam, that thing was in the bottom of the hole. So I got foam, Rob. I don't know if that's going to happen to anyone else, but
I got foam. We've heard about painted cups, and we've heard about other things like that. Now we've got foamed. Yeah, that's no doubt about it. It's another thing that we can look for is to, and that's what I thought too. I saw Neil Johnson last week, lip out. He did a hard lip out, and you know, I didn't have a chance to ask him about it, but he was playing real well in the final round, or actually the second round, and trying to get on a run, and all over the cup, just didn't get any in the fall, and then finally gets one that looked like it was in, and it grazed the edge of the cup, but it looked like a traditional lip out more than he got foamed. And it did look, based on how far down in the cup he was putting his fingers to get the ball out, that there was something in the bottom of them. And I'm thinking that, especially with these tours that have been going through the pandemic, that they're careful not to do anything that would otherwise give the impression that they're not following the safety guidelines that people are trying to follow. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what goes on there. Other than that, Gary, I don't know. It's been a good opportunity for people to get out and play golf. We've got our hole-in-one photo gallery for 2020 up, and we continue to look on at courses on social media, whether it be Twitter or Facebook, to get a lot of them. But you can send them to me at rob@killarneygolfmedia.com. We've already got more than 30 this year, Gary, and we've had a very short season.
Yeah, I still have only seen one in my life, Rob. Never made one, but I've looked at that. It's fun to see what guys are posting from Facebook and other things about their holes in one. I'm always envious when I see that. And Rob, you've got you're working on something, Senior Salute. Why don't you tell us a little bit what that's going to be about?
Yeah, we're going to spend the first basically 16 days of June from the weeks that they would have had the regionals, sectionals, and state tournaments. And we've sent out surveys to a lot of the top seniors from last year's state tournament who were juniors a year ago, and asked them 9 questions, a quick 9 with each of these kids, and just to kind of get their take on what they miss about not having the season, what they remember from their high school careers. Remember, Gary, these guys had their, literally their careers cut short on a dime. And when the WI voted that there would be no season of any length, that was it. And it was really neat. And we'll talk more about it next week. But a lot of great stories and some great appreciation from the kids towards teammates that have helped them get to the point where they're at right now, coaches who have created tournament opportunities in the state of Wisconsin for some of these kids. I mean, I think you and I agree that the kids today are absolutely spoiled. You talk about playing your high school golf at Grant Park. I played mine, luckily, at Bullseye Country Club in Wisconsin Rapids, but, middle school golf at some 9-hole, courses that, aren't the greatest, but they were home. And, these kids are playing Black Wolf Run and Whistling Straits Irish Course and Erin Hills and, so many great courses throughout the state of Wisconsin. And it was nice to see the kids very appreciative of that. We'll start that tentatively here on Sunday hoping to hear from where you get on the weekends. We're going to do a cluster of teams that would have been very competitive coming back this year with a lot of seniors on them. And then during the week, a couple of seniors, individuals that will tell you what they miss most. Amazingly, Gary, a lot of them miss school. Can you believe it? Did you ever miss school?
You know, I believe that, Rob, because it's been, you have a lot of friends in high school, obviously, that all of a sudden you can't see, and this goes on for months, and there's all that uncertainty around it. But I think everybody likes a routine. Everybody likes to feel like they know what's happening next and they know what their week is going to look like. And we've been, things have changed definitely that way. And I can believe that kids miss school. I know I would have missed it. No doubt about being around my friends.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, we haven't missed a beat here with the Talking Dot Golf podcast. Gary, have fun covering the event today and especially have fun tomorrow over at the club at Lac La Belle.
Thanks, Rob. You don't have to tell me to have fun. I know I will. Thank you.
we'll look forward to seeing the numbers, and we'll talk about the number. We'll break down the numbers next week and add to the growing legacy of Gary D'Amato's notebook. So, folks, appreciate your time here listening to Talking Dot Golf. Of course, Talking Dot Golf is sponsored by the club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The golf course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison and Milwaukee. Don't forget the Summit Private Golf Club's grand opening, June 20th. Find out more on its website at club@laclabelle.com. This has been Talking Dot Golf on wisconsin.golf. We'll talk to you next week.